There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
The beautiful thing about this show is we just let it rip. So
Kings in the Cold Open.
Group golf therapy with Mr. Sean Yu.
I would have been mad if I got like a rundown on an email or like an outline.
Oh, then I'm so happy we didn't send you that.
Yeah, sometimes we do that, but it's mostly for the like, you know, sometimes we go deep. Sometimes we go emotional on this podcast and people need to know like this is what you're stepping into. We're not asking what's your favorite club in the bag.
Yep, we don't say what's your favorite course, what's your favorite club.
What's your favorite trauma?
Yeah, favorite trauma, exactly.
Having said that, what's your favorite club in the bag, Sean?
Yeah.
Favorite club in the bag? Oof. Great question. Honestly, I've been loving my 58. I've been hitting it really well. At any club above like a 7-iron freaks me out, so I'm just kind of
trying
to go with the lower numbers.
Yeah, all right, let's unpack that fear.
Yeah, let's go there.
What freaks you out? What do you get scared of?
Freaks me out? Dude, golf is, I say this all the time, and like you've heard like every, you know, athlete and you know, famous person who plays golf be like, it's the, you know, toughest mental sport, the hardest physical mental sport. And like, I think the fear is generally like myself, but also, it's just like dealing with emotions is scary on the course because you're like, yeah, I'm just going. It's going to be a great time. I'm going to hang with the boys and have a good time, not even think about my score. And, you know, you shank one ball and it's all downhill for there. And it's like this, it's this fear of like, why am I letting myself get like this? Why can't I just like have fun and enjoy myself? Like I went to the range just before this and like hit like three bad shots in a row. And I was like, just devastated. And then I was like, why am I letting myself get like this?
Entire really self-worth is in question.
And then I get like a Twitter DM from a friend who sent me like this insane chip shot from the tournament that's happening right now. And I was like, fuck that. Like, it just makes me not want to play the sport anymore. You know, like everyone else is so good.
Oh man. You're comparing your range session at Wilson Harding to what they're doing on tour.
Exactly.
That's misaligned.
Exactly.
That's like us going to the park and trying to dunk and then watching like House of Highlights. Like it's a different class. Like we're good. Like we'll never be LeBron. It's fine.
And like, why am I letting myself get there? You know, like I just don't get it,
man.
I think golf it's strange because you can have those moments where you feel like you could be Tiger Woods. Like you have that chip in, you get a hole in one, you make a 50-foot birdie putt, and you're like, I could do this. And then the next, you know, you shank six in a row after that. So I think the feeling like the highs are very high and the lows are very low in golf.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like I could never throw the ball 50 yards like Aaron Rodgers, but I could, you know, make a 50-yard chip in. And, you know, so I think that's like you see yourself in the place of greatness, but you also see the very lows as well.
Which is why it's like objectively the most addicting sport by a mile, because like, you know, and knowing that you can play this for a really long time. Like I've played with random dudes who are like 85 and just like whooping my ass, you
and
know,
they can
just
ball. Like, yeah, that's the thing.
Right. And so like, you know, knowing that it adds to the addiction of the game. Cause you're like, well, I have so many years left and I can only hopefully improve. But the addiction for me, I think comes from, and I'm new to the sport. I picked it up like during the pandemic and, you know, grew up around the sport, but was always like, not for me. And then the pandemic kind of forced my hand. But I remember I took this class called Sport Film and Literature in college, and the professor basically taught philosophy under the guise of sports. And so we'd watch a lot of like sports movies that talked more about life. And he was a big Joseph Campbell guy. So like Monomyth and like Hero's Journey,
cool.
Things of that nature. But we watched Legend of Bagger Vance, and he, you know, his whole thesis in that class was like, follow your bliss. Right. And, and the central theme in Bagger Vance is the perfect shot and like chasing the perfect shot. And like that is addicting to me.
Find
like,
your swing.
That's right.
This is such a timely reference, by the way.
Is it
Will Smith? I mean,
yeah, exactly. But like, find the perfect swing, the perfect shot, and when you feel that on a golf course, you're like, it's just pure. It's like pure ecstasy. Like, you really can't beat that feeling.
Yeah, man, that's so funny. It's funny that you bring up the hero's journey too. I literally just wrote something for my newsletter. I'm trying to break par for the first time in 2022.
Okay,
and so I'm giving myself one attempt a month for the entire year. To like one attempt to break par every right. month. And so I love the monomyth hero's journey, kind of like three-act structure, Lord of the Rings sort of shit. So I made my own hero's journey template. I got to send this to you and get your thoughts.
Yeah, seriously.
Very poignant for this podcast.
Yeah, man. Actually, Sean, you brought up something that I'm quite interested in. If y'all don't already follow Sean on Twitter, you're doing yourself a disservice. Dude is one of the funny, like
elite Twitter follow.
Yeah, like in seven words, we'll have your jaw on the floor.
It's too
like,
kind. It's not true, but nah, I appreciate it.
For real, like you talked about college, you talked about what you studied, and I'm referencing your Twitter because you tweeted about this either today or yesterday. You unpacked a little bit about your experience with diversity in the industry that you pursued out of college. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, fast forward, I don't know how long ago you graduated, but you know, we're in 2022, you're working in the media sports mm-hmm. industry space, kind of under your own terms. Like you are an all-encompassing creator now. So can you kind of weave the web from college, going through what you went through in college, seeing how the industry looked, and looking at where it is now and what you get to do?
Yeah, I mean, I always love talking about that because I think there's a lot of young people who stress out about it. And I know you guys are all in careers where it's very uniquely your own journey, you know, mm-hmm. and you kind of did it your own way. And so, in high school, I love sports, but, you know, given the limits of an Asian American man, I couldn't make any of the teams, or I wasn't, you know, excelling in any sports. So I was like, oh, what's the next form of that? And I was like, oh, like announcing games. And so I lucked into my high school had a really great TV program, and I was able to call football games and all different types of sports. And I was like, okay, it was like sophomore year of high school. And I was like, I know exactly what I want to do. I want to be a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I want to call highlights on SportsCenter. I watch SportsCenter every morning, every night. I'm like, this is what I want to do. And I go to college. I went to Ithaca College, which pretty decent, you know, liberal arts communication school. And I was able to do that. I was able to call radio games my freshman year. I was able to, you know, sideline reporter, play-by-play, all of that. And as you get older, you know, and as you go through school, you know, your mentors or guidance counselors of that nature are, you know, giving you kind of just like career advice. And the career advice I got from just nearly everyone when it came to being a broadcaster is, look, you're going to have to work your ass off in a low level market, some, you know, kind of middle of nowhere city, and really work your ass off and get in reps. And, you know, there's a good chance you might not ever make it. There's a good chance that the highest level you'll go to is like a news anchor at like Rochester, New York, you know, and to really jump in and make that leap, it's a combination of luck and a combination of who you know. And as I'm like broadcasting and doing all this stuff, I had just my mind and my kind of soul had a clash against the stuck up nature and the traditional, like I'd get notes, you know, on games I'd call or stuff I'd anchor. And the notes would be like, hey, we need your cadence to be more like this. Or if you can enunciate this, or maybe just, you know, read the prompter as is. And, you know, they kind of box you in at the end of the day, because that's what's on TV and that's what they know. So I'm dealing with this idea of like, okay, like I think like they would prefer a diverse face and a diverse voice, but also why am I supposed to do that in the way that's like cookie cutter or the way that they generally thought of? And plus I didn't want to live in a middle of nowhere city. I was like, I want to work in New York or LA. That's kind of just where my mind is attracted to. And so I was like, let me just produce. Let me just, I like producing. I like being behind the scenes. I think I'm very creative. If the chance happens that I go at a job where I can essentially pitch something for myself where I'm on TV or I'm calling something, like maybe we'll go that way. And I just took this producing route. And, you know, I thought my last job at The Ringer, I was going to get kind of on-air opportunities. But, you know, you realize also that, you know, the game is the game. And, you know, it kind of, if there's people in your way that don't want you to do that thing, then it's never going to happen. And that's not a knock on anyone. It's just like kind of how the industry works. And now I just happen to be at a place, fortunately, at my current company where they kind of entrust creatives to make whatever they want. And they are allowing people to fail. They're allowing people to try things and just kind of giving a lot of support, which I find to be almost non-existent in media today. The idea of it, the sound of it doesn't make any sense to most people who work in media, because they're like, no, like, you can make whatever you want and
control.
And you can fail. Right. Yeah. And you have some control and some creative freedom. And it's rare. And I think there's something also nice about it that, like, you know, at the end of the day, like, not many people are watching it. And that's really freeing that you're not doing this for
I'm
any
watching
audience.
It.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I am a subscriber. People, I am a liker. Anytime you and Zach pop up on my YouTube, I am watching it.
And to the people who are watching, you know, I love you to death and I really genuinely appreciate it. But there's something freeing about making something, knowing that, like, not many people are watching. Like, it's such a unique place to be in. And it kind of breeds a pure chaotic kind of thing. And now I'm like, now that I'm on camera, I'm like, do I even want to go back to broadcasting? Like, do I ever want to, like, call a basketball game as a play-by-play announcer? Like, probably not, because at the end of the day, like, you're still boxed in. Like, that clip I played, it was Chris Whittingham from, like, Dan Le Batard's show, and he talked about, like, Gus Johnson was doing it in his own way, and while, like, a large population of the fandom and the audience was, like, loving it, like, the higher-ups were just like, he's a little too loud, or he's a little too boisterous, or his personality is coming too a little bit loud. And let's put him on the sixth NFL broadcast, not the main one. And you're just like, you know, I'm sure you guys have dealt with it, like, in your lives. Like, why am I being critiqued for my personality? Why
I'm a
am I
peacock being coach? You gotta let me fly.
Gotta let me fly, exactly. Captain.
Exactly. And it's just like that to me is like the best artists or the best creatives. Like, just let them be who they are.
Yeah, man.
Wow, there's so much there.
Yeah. Well,
this is therapy, right?
That is what you're paying for right now, Sean.
Yeah.
Right.
My insurance will cover.
Yeah, we do accept insurance. Yeah.
and what is the content you're creating now, which I obsess over? I mean, what is that giving you now?
Honestly, it's just fun. And it's rare to be making stuff with no pressure that, like, I keep saying to, like, my bosses and managers, like, I just want to make stuff that I think is good and that the people who are also making it think is good, and that while we're making it, we're having a lot of fun. And if the audience doesn't click in the way that we think, then we could go back to the drawing board. But for right now, like, I think it's just really fun. And for me, I'm just still trying to find my voice, right? Like, I'm still, like, I'm 30. I'm going to turn 31 in June. Like, I still don't really know my voice, right? I don't know. I definitely know who I am as a person. I'm very confident in that. But, like, your voice on air is a totally different thing. Or your personality in media is a totally different thing. So I'm still looking for that. And I'm glad I have the opportunity to, like, kind of, like, search and dig through it. Cause that's when, you know, you can have a career, right? It's like, you're very confident in who you are on air and what this personality that you want people to see.
Yeah.
And to your point, like, if you're doing it for yourself and it's fun, that exploration and discovery of finding out what your voice is makes it all the reason that you should be doing what you're doing. Like, as soon as you start doing things for other people or what an audience might want, or what, you know, God forbid, like, the company that's paying you, might want from you to box you in, to speak in that Nebraska, Iowa accent that every single broadcaster is speaks in, right?
That non-regional like, diction.
Exactly. Like that joy just goes out the window. And I think like, what else are we doing this for other than to find passion, find joy, and like communicate a good story?
And, and to the Bagger Vance reference, like you're just looking for your authentic swing. And it doesn't matter. Like, it's not a golf thing. Like, that's why, like, he showed us that movie, my professor. It's like, it's not a golf thing. It's a life thing. Like, if once you find that, like, you really can't lose in any area of your life. And the search is endless. Like, even if you think you find it, it's probably another version of your swing later down the line.
That's beautiful, man. I mean, I feel like the reason why our humble golf podcast has been able to get the traction and you know, get to where we are today is because this has been our like creative outlet. Like we don't answer to anyone but the three of us here. We are able to create with just pure joy and like love in our hearts. And we don't, and I think, if we would have been able to been like acquired by someone, we might have like grown in the sense of like numbers or, you know, things like that. But, you know, that isn't, at the end of the day, what we want. Like we want to be able to do this for ourselves and for the people that tune in. So, I mean, we hear you loud and clear.
And I just want to say, like, I remember when I first, you know, got to your pod and you know, whether it was from Instagram or whatever, I was just like, and it's a credit to you guys. It's very transparent that you guys just make this for yourselves and people who think like you and kind of like the things you like and want to talk about the things you like. Like it's so evident that you're not making this podcast for anyone other than yourselves. And I think that is like, that's the slow burn. And, you know, I think creatives who understand that can deal and persevere, but the reward at the end of the day, when that thing blows up is like, so it's just, that's a lifelong thing, right? Yeah. That's like a career changer that you want to do. And, you know, a credit to you guys that already like that kind of energy is really transparent and you can feel it, you know, just from the pod and just from your socials in general.
That's beautiful, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's really kind. Thank you. This might undermine what we're about, but like, we don't even really know what we're doing. That's kind of the thing. Like we're just asking questions. We're not even giving anyone answers or like saying, this is the thing. This is what you should be doing. This is how you should be playing golf. This is what we're just asking people questions. We're figuring it out and hitting record while we're figuring it out. And I think like, I don't know if that undermines us or if that adds more validity to it, but like,
we're just curious boys. Yeah. We're just curious boys, man.
We just want to know.
Honestly, I think there's something so authentic to the fact of like, maybe you'll never find it, right? Yeah. Maybe you guys will always be on this curious journey, and that's what makes the pod great. And that's what continues this creative itch that you're hoping to scratch. And it's like, I'm always like, if I ever feel content or I ever feel like I found it or I did it, I feel like I would find and feel more depression. More anxiousness of like, oh, I found it. And I'm, you know, like, let's say like I have this like big career moment at 35 and I think I find it. Then it's like, then what?
Yeah.
You know, and then that leads to another fear. And hopefully you want to be in a creative space where you're like constantly searching and you're constantly looking for it. You always hear those like old actors that are like, why are you acting? You have all the money in the world. You're the most famous person in the world. You've done all these Oscars. You won all these awards. It's like, they're not doing it for that. They're just searching, you know?
It's about
like,
the process for them. And we talk about that all the time. Like we're not in it for a goal. We're not, cause like once you get to the goal, it's like, then what? You just make a new goal. Like we have to be in it for the love of doing it. Mm-hmm. And even tying back into like, you know, my quest to break par for this year, it's like, I'm kind of terrified of that because if I do it, then what? Like I still feel shitty. Like,
Well, like J.R. Smith just talked about how he, you know, like a veteran player finally won the championship. And he's like, you know, he thought like reaching that pinnacle of winning a championship that he's like, you know, that would make me complete. That would like make me feel whole. But and like paraphrasing all this. But then he's like, I've never been more depressed than after winning the championship because I didn't feel anything. Like it was just like, why don't I feel complete? And then like he talked about how he started doing the college golf, and he's like never felt more like alive than playing college golf as a champion, NBA champion, multimillionaire, famous athlete. And this is the thing that's completing him as a person. So it's like you said,
it's
the play, man.
It's,
yeah.
It's the joy in just playing and what you get to do. Like we get to do this podcast.
Right.
And the moment we stop looking at it like that is a moment where we have to look in the mirror and be like, what are we doing?
Right. Yeah. What now?
And Sean, I really wanted to ask you, just going off of this conversation, like where and when do you feel the most complete? But I think I almost want to flip that on its head and be like, where do you feel the most incomplete? Where are you like, at what points in your life and at what times in your life are you searching the most? Where are you like, I don't know what this is?
I think, and I'm in a really good place with this current job because, you know, similar, and I think golf really changed my life and at least my perspective on life of, and Brad, you mentioned earlier, it's like never be too high, never be too low. And never look back, never look too forward, you know, constantly like stay in the present. And, I think that extends to my job. And when I feel incomplete is when I think that the successes of my work will help me in my life or benefit me in my life. And, you know, I worked at the Ringer where I had a lot of highs, and I think a lot of those highs led me to believe that my work, made me who I am, or my work, or the things I'd produce that would do well, was like a good for me, or like a check mark in my life, or another, you know, peg on the ladder I had to climb. And it's like when I was able to mentally separate work from life and understand that like work is work and life is life, that's when I'm in like the pure mode and like the creative, like, you know, cruise control. Like I think there were times where, you know, something creatively that I put a lot of work and put a lot of time and put a lot of effort into did really poorly, and that would devastate me. And then on the flip side, if something I put a lot of work into did really well, I was like, oh, why isn't this making me feel great? Or like I thought this accomplishment would change my life and add to, you know, my life, and it doesn't. And that's the sweet spot, right? Is like when you realize that high or low, it's not going to change who you are, as long as you're kind of just in that search or just in the, like, you know, like Dame Lillard, the grind mode. That's why, like another basketball reference, like he's never going to leave Portland, and he constantly talks about why he always loves the grind. And it, for him, I don't think he ever needs to win. I don't think that validates him. Is
right. Yeah.
The hunger and the push is what validates him. And I just love that. And I don't even know if I'm in that moment right now. I think everyone deals with highs and lows consistently. And so I can't say that I'm in that like perfect area or like that perfect creative space, because there's always issues and there's always things that aren't going great. But I think the more I can think and be aware of that is another step in the right direction.
I really like the Dame reference, because I think that's, you know, part wisdom for someone like as young as Dame to come to that realization. Because I think in like our society, we are constantly taught that you need to win in order to feel whole and feel validated, and that's the pinnacle of success. And for him to, and you know, I guess we will never know until his career is over and he's retired and he's had some time away from it, but if he truly just is fueled by the grind and not necessarily winning a championship, that's awesome that he can find that so early in his life and not have to, you know, be in his like late career trying to chase a ring just to feel like he's a complete person or a legend.
He would be a absolute tyrant if he joined like if he were, you know, like 36 year old Dame on this Laker squad,
right?
Like, oh my god, that would be so much fun to watch. I know we'll never get it, but
no
Just and, thinking and about we him don't coming deserve off the it. Bench, given,
no,
given
we don't deserve it.
Dropping 9 threes a game, just like
half court.
Yeah,
I have a Dame story for you guys that I'll tell you after we hang up. But
I can't wait.
Put a, incredible
put a,
cliffhanger.
Put a bookmark in there.
Yeah, Sean, I wanted to ask how golf fits into all this because it's the game that can't be perfected, right? Like you, it's the chase that's. That same creative chase, even if you get a hole in one, you've still got to move on to the next hole. There's never a finish line. And you alluded to golf changing your life. You found it during the pandemic. What did golf give you that differs from your work that maybe helps in life?
Yeah, I think, you know, you could put and relate golf to every aspect of your life or any profession. Again, like the ideas of the highs and lows and the idea that there's always a next hole, there's always a next shot. I think what amazes me about golf is like, I'm constantly put in situations that I've never been put in. And I think that's going to continue no matter how many times I play golf. Like I hit a bunker shot, but I'm at like a weird angle and there's a giant lip, you know, like I've never been in this position. I don't know what to do. I've never been taught this. There's no guidebook, you know, you can watch right. any Phil, you can watch as many Phil videos as you want, but each lie is different, right? That's right. The thing is like each lie is different.
And but you shoot free throws at any gym and it's the same shot.
Exactly. And it's like, you can't compare golf to any other sport because of that reason. It's like the slight angle of your foot being lower than the ball. Like I don't, like there's all these little things. And obviously like, similar to life, the more you play, the more you will experience that. And the more you will have things to from your past to like use in your toolbox. But mm-hmm. a lot of times, like it's just everything's new and everything's uncertain. And for every great shot, 12 awful shots are going to follow. But I also think golf changed my life in a, so my golf origin story, which I'll share real quickly is, like, you know, my dad, like any other Korean man, obsessed with golf and played it constantly. He played nearly every other sport, but I knew golf was one of his biggest sports. But my dad passed away when I was 9. So I didn't get to really experience golf with him. And my only real memory of him golfing was one time I was like playing with his clubs in the garage and he came down and like freaked out because I'm like slamming it on the concrete floor. And looking back, I'm like, yeah, what a fucking idiot I was to like these nice ass clubs, just like swinging them on the floor. And I don't know why I remember that so vividly, but you know, when he passed, you know, single mom, I'm never going to get a set of clubs. I'm never going to really get lessons. So golf was always in like the rearview mirror for me. And I almost started to have this like firewall with the sport. Like I loved watching the sport. I'm just always going to watch any types of sports. That's just how my brain is wired. But something about golf, I was like, I'm never going to play. And I like all my best friends in high school played golf. They were on the team. Like they would always go out for the weekends and they'd always ask me, I was like, I'm not going to play. I was like, And I think there's a fear also for me generally, like I don't like doing something where I know I'm bad at it. Like when someone's like, hey, do you want to play this video game? And I'm like, well, you're already good. Like I'm not going to play with you.
I'm just going
to
lose.
I'm just going to lose. And I'm constantly the type of person who hates losing more than they like winning. Like it's just, that's just how I'm wired. And so knowing that I was never going to really like make the effort to play golf or really, you know, have the opportunity and pandemic change forced my hand. Like I play basketball a lot. That's like my go-to sport. And I couldn't go to a gym. I can't play, can't work out. There's only so much running I can do. You know, I'm not built like that. And so luckily like my roommate at the time, who's also named Sean, is an avid golfer. And I credit him, you know, a big time because he was like a pain in my ass. Like, because he just wanted someone to play with. And he was just like, dude, come play with me. Come play golf. Let's go to the range. Hey, come play golf. Let's go to the range. You're going to like it. I know you're going to like it. Let's play golf. And I went months. Like, I'm telling you, like, months. And the 2 years even before the pandemic, just being like, fuck off. Like, I'm not playing golf. Like, you know I'm not going to do it. I don't need another addiction in my life. Like, just back off. And, like, the first couple times going to the range with him, I was like, I don't know. And then we just played around. I think it was at like Wilson Harding. And like something about like it just didn't register to me until I was out there that you're outside for 4.5 hours and for the most part it's beautiful out, and my brain like didn't think about that while like I was like had this firewall and this block in my mind. And so like I was just out for 4 hours getting high, drinking, and I was just like, even though I'm playing shitty, like this is awesome in and of itself. And so that extended to me, you know, just imagining what it would be like to play golf with my dad at this age. Like, what kind of conversations would I have? What kind of, you know, just, you know, what would that environment be like? Because when you golf, like half the time you're talking about golf, you're talking about the game. But then there's those like moments where you just happen upon a really deep, profound conversation with your boys or random people that you're playing with. And that's just because you're out there for so long and there's only so much of the game you can talk about. And so like that added a level of like thought and exploration, and you know, the pod I'm doing, which, you know, I don't even know if it's gonna happen or not, has led me to that search and exploration of like, man, like what was my dad like when he played golf? Like what was his game like? What was his headspace like, you know? And that aspect of golf, I think, changed my life. And along with the fact of like, it is the most relatable sport to life that you can ever imagine. But there's just something about the sport where I'm like, the second I caught the bug, I'm like, man, yeah, I got this. I got this sport for life.
Wow.
There are a trillion follow-up questions. Go, Connor.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's hard to know where to start. I think
it's therapy, right? Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
So we ask a question a lot on this show that was brought to us by another person named Sean. If you were to play a round of golf with a younger version of yourself, what would you talk to them about? And I kind of want to twist that a little bit and ask, if you were to play a round of golf with your dad, what kind of questions would you ask him? What do you think that experience would be like for you?
Like, I always ask myself those hypotheticals, and I think it's impossible to answer because there's so much I don't know about him, you know, like, he passed away when I was 9. So I've lived more of my life without him than I have with him. Right. And so like the questions are endless, right? But I think from just like being on the golf course perspective, like, I think I'd be curious about like what's going on in his head. Like, what's his mental game like? You know, what are his swing thoughts like? And what are the things that ground him in the sport? What are the things that like the pieces of information or the quotes in your head that bring you back to square one with your golf game, especially your swing? It's always like, there's always those like little things that bring you back. And I'd ask him things like that. Like, how are you going to set up for this shot? And that answer probably could lead to a little bit of like life things of how, you know, mentally, you know, I play with a friend who was like much better than me. And I asked him like, what do you think about right before a shot? And he's like, nothing. And I was like,
I did say that.
And when people say that, I'm like, how? Cause I'm like, I'm an overthinker. I'm a habitual overthinker. So like thoughts are just racing in my head, which I know is awful for your, you know, pre-swing thoughts, but I wonder just from a like father son perspective of like, he thinks the way I do, or if it's different, like if our brains are different and wired in a different way, and how different they are.
Would you ask him anything non-golf related?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I'm you know, way over the grieving process. Like I someone asked me the other day, and I was like, they're like, how often do you think about him? Do you think about him every time you play golf? I'm like, absolutely not. Like I'm 30 now. There's only a few times where I do think about him, and it's, you know, it happens more than you'd imagine, but it's not like constant. So because of that like gap in time, like, I'd want to ask him everything. Like, what do you like to do? You know, like, because the things I remember are so vivid, but so specific. Like, I know he loved gangster movies and like martial arts movies. So I was like 7 or 8. I watched all 3 Godfathers, Goodfellas, Scarface, like, you know, every Jackie Chan movie, every Bruce Lee movie imaginable. And so I remember that really sticking with me. I know he loved beer. Like, I remember like there's moments where like I think it's a can of ginger ale and I drink it and it's just like Budweiser and I would like spit it out. like weird, like vivid memories like that. And I know he loves sports. So I think I'd, you know, kind of ask him general questions about that. And also like, what else, you know, like the stuff that like that's all surface level, right? At the end of the day. So like, I think I'd love to ask like some more introspective stuff and how he like saw the world, like,
you know,
even like politics, like, what do you think about the current state of the world? Like, how is your, cause I don't know, like, I don't know if he was like a, you know, red blooded Republican or what have you. Like, I just don't know. And it's, I'm like, there's so much curiosities there.
Can we talk about the self-exploration through the podcast?
Yeah.
Paint the picture for us what the podcast is.
Real quick, what's the podcast?
So I think there's only so much I can technically say because like I'm still reporting. I'm still in the hunt. We don't even know if the pod's going to happen. It could get canceled. Who knows? But to be somewhat discreet, we're going to do a narrative podcast on a once very famous Korean American golfer who was compared to Tiger Woods at one point in his career. And so within that exploration, in his story, he had a really tough relationship with his father. And I think a lot of, you know, and Drew came on to chat about it. And I think a lot of Korean Americans, Asian Americans, immigrants in general deal with this tiger parent kind of vibe or an overbearing parent, especially if you're designed to pursue something that you want to make as your career. And I think Koreans inherently culturally deal with that on a higher level. Like if you want to be a musician, well, you're going to have to work 8 to 10 hours a day and work your ass off. And it's always like, if you want to do this thing, you got to be the best. And I think that's a general like Korean mentality. Usually it leads to academics, but you know, that it happens in sports. And you see that in the LPGA a lot. Like a lot of these Korean golfers talk about how like overbearing their parents were. But going back to this specific golfer, he had a really tough relationship with his father who was, you know, overbearing their parents. I think when he was like 11 or 12, sent him to Palm Springs just to play PGA West and live there. And he's like 13, 14, 15, and, you know, like kind of isolated. And so that aspect of this golfer's life is incredibly fascinating to me and oddly like relatable in a weird way, because I saw that in my life. I saw people around me dealing with that. A lot of my best friends, a lot of my Korean friends dealt with a lot of parental pressure. Hey, you got to go to SAT school like 7 times a day and you got to like, you know, do all this shit. You got to put in all this effort, extra effort. And I missed that. And I avoided that because when my dad passed away, there's only so much my mom could do. Single mom goes from housewife to just now has to work and has to support the family. So there was a big, like, I didn't have that. And so I think the exploration extends to like, would I have dealt with that? Would my dad have been that type of parent if I said I wanted to pursue this? And part of me thinks no, but part of me thinks also why not? And that extends to I grew up very in a religious home. And so like, I have a kind of spiritual background, but my mom used to always say like, you know, like the classic, like, Christian or, you know, spiritual mom thing of like, everything happens for a reason, right? Everything happens for a reason. And like, obviously like my dad passing away at a young age is like hard to swallow that pill of like, everything happens for a reason. But I legitimately would not be here in this field with the career that I have, if my dad was still alive. I know that for a fact. I just know that I think my path would have been a lot different. I think I would have pursued a more traditional career. And maybe this creative bug or this itch would have been scratched like in a midlife crisis or in a quarter life crisis when I'm like, I don't like this. I don't want to be a lawyer or a doctor. Let me just quit it. But I think a lot of that is like a product of my mom being like, do whatever you want. Just make sure you do it well. And I hope you stay a nice person and remain kind. And, you know, she's always like, follow Jesus and make sure you come home on time. And that was my only rules. Like, I, you know, like my mom was very much like, just like it was, it like, I think I left nurture and went to nature, you know, I, you know, like that kind of thing. And I think that is why that self exploration with the pod is so fascinating to me. Cause I'm like, if I decided to pursue a sport or music or something, like I'm pretty sure I would have dealt with stuff with what this golfer dealt with. And, it's interesting to like really dig into that.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I really hope it happens. Me too. I'm sure you do, but I so badly want that to see the light of day. Because asking yourself those hypothetical questions while feckless in that you won't get any answers, like it's just your best guess, but mm-hmm. I'm sure you are learning things about yourself along the way.
That's why I said, regardless of this pod happens or not, like I've truly enjoyed the process of it all.
That's
like,
what's up.
I think it was like meant to be, even if it doesn't come out like that, like getting to do this was meant to be because it's kind of opened up the doors and allowed me to think differently. Like the other day, because my producer was like, it'd be good if you talked to some of your dad's friends that he golfed with. And these are people I haven't talked to since I was like 10, 11. You know, these are people who are like really in my dad's life. And I remember going to like big dinner parties or whatever with all these people. But my mom's lost connection with them. You know, like every once in a while she'll hit them up, but like they're not in my life. And so I called one of the guys and he was like, you could immediately tell like his face like changed emotions. Like he was very bright and like, I think he was just itching to talk about my dad. And I think that's a product of my dad probably having a big influence on a lot of these people's lives. Cause he was, you know, beloved. And I think after death, even more so, but he was like, well, you got to talk to this guy because that's the guy who golfed with your dad all the time. And so now I'm just going on this like hunt and it's like, you know, in quotes, maybe for the pod, but it's become more for myself in general. And I really appreciate that. And there's a fondness of this project in general, regardless of if it happens or not.
Man, that's beautiful. That's
super cool. I mean, so cool. I think just what we were talking about of like how, like there's a lot of unanswered questions of like, you know, that this was 20 some years ago and you're like, I didn't really know who the man my father was, but being able to talk to people that were in his life that were, you know, peers, friends, like that might open a lot of doors and like you might get to see a different you know, you get to know him a little bit through these stories. Like that sounds amazing. Like I hope that your journey with that is successful.
Yeah, appreciate it. And it's just interesting like how that all just came out because of golf. Right? Like the way I got the pod was I started golfing, I started posting about it, and then a friend who worked at the company was like, "Hey, we want a consulting producer on the pod because we just don't want three white people producing a pod about a Korean American golfer." And I'm like, okay, wow, woke company, like reasonable. Sick. You know, it's just like, good for you. I was like, I'll take any call. And in the midst of the call, like I'm telling this story because they're like, when did you start playing golf? And like, what's your kind of golf background? And I tell the story kind of I told you guys, and they were immediately like, you should just host the pod.
It's yours.
Yeah. Right. It's yours. No, I mean this like legitimate. I would have never got this opportunity if I didn't start golfing. And, you know, maybe it's the pandemic's reasoning for it or my roommates, but like something about where golf caught me in my life was just perfect. And the timing like is very natural. And that's why like I have a real kind of existential love for the sport. Like it just, everything kind of fell into place without me planning it. And it just happened so naturally.
Man. And I'm happy it brought you to me because
I know like meeting you guys is huge.
Yeah. Cause man, aside from, you know, connecting on the internet, like I really enjoy golfing with you and like, it's a great hang.
Yeah.
And I'm bummed that you can't make 3:30 tomorrow because I have so many more questions I would ask you. but for now, I think maybe we move on to some meat and potatoes.
Yeah, let's hit me. I'm all ears.
I mean, we've talked a lot about your dad during the pod, and I appreciate you sharing as much as you have.
For real,
like truly, that's what this show is about. Really, it's like your relationship to this game looks different than our next guest or our last guest or the one before them, and it's just beautiful, like. The ties are so strong to this game and everybody takes away something different. So the vulnerability it takes to open up about something like that that's so personal. Like, truly, I appreciate that. That has nothing to do with the question I'm about to ask you.
I love it.
You've returned to Westchester after winning the men's championship, and everyone is sitting at the table, this newly furnished 3-year project. They've built out the dining hall, and finally people can start going. They can use the bathroom in there now. They can sit down. They have somewhere to sit. And yeah, Sean, you were serving course. Up. Right. Backstory. They've been building out the dining hall at Westchester for what seems like a decade, but finally starting to take shape. Anyway, you've won the Westchester Men's Open. You've returned. You're hosting. Everyone is sitting down at the table because it's Sean Yu's menu. What is on the menu at your championship dinner?
Oh, in terms of food. Oh, yeah. I love that you asked me food question, because I just love talking about food in general.
Go off.
Shit, I'll mute my mic. I could go the classic, like, you know, a nice, you know, ribeye or like a rotisserie chicken or whatever. But something about the sport that I've also come to love is how many Koreans play the sport. I'll play Roosevelt in the mornings, and I'm always matched up with an ajumma or an ajushi, which is like an older man or an older woman. And there's something so incredible about just how many Koreans in Los Angeles, let alone in the world, but like specifically in Los Angeles, play golf. The courses are dominated by them. And I know that there are, like, I've witnessed it too, where like there's a bunch of, like, you know, racist white dudes being like, all these fucking Koreans on the course, blah, blah, blah.
Yo,
like,
I check every single one.
Right.
And
you know, like, that exists, and I'm glad that, like, we have dominated the sport so much that there is even an opportunity for that to exist, you know, like that we have become so dominant in the Los Angeles culture that there is hatred for in real? That way. Cause that means you're just doing something right. Right? Anytime there's hate, that means you're doing something right. So that extends to me wanting a kind of more traditional Korean food dish. Like, I want like a classic Korean spread of like all the banchans, like, you know, barbecue, like these like braised short ribs with potatoes and carrots that I love, like this like kind of spicy fried chicken dish, like chapches, like this like glass noodle dish with veggies, you know. All I just want like a traditional Korean platter, so that even the people at Westchester who might not be hip to that kind of food
can't handle like, the well, kimchi. Can't handle.
They'll be like,
spice.
Well, he won, so let's just try it, I guess. And then they end up loving it, you know, because everyone loves Korean food. It's just a fact.
It's fine.
It is.
Wow. So fucking good. Speaking of, I can't wait to eat with you, Sean. God damn.
If you guys end up getting a secondary pod where you just eat and play golf, like, sign me up.
We have something brewing.
Oh.
Sean, what are some of your favorite golf smells?
Wow, that's such a good question. I'm not a morning person. I hate waking up in the morning, but I will make a real effort to play a 9-hole at Roosevelt, because the smells of like being one of the first people out there and they've just freshly mowed it is profound. Like, you really can't get that smell, and it like I can almost synesthesia, like I can almost smell it and feel the energy of the dew and the wetness. Like, I love when the grass is slick. And there's like, it's just been cut and you smell that, and like, and that's why I'm like, people will be like, oh, what'd you do this morning? I was like, I play golf. Like, I play 9 holes, and I like, you can just hear it in my voice where I'm like calm and serene and like nothing can stop my day. And I'm like, smells are the big part of that. It's like that.
For sure.
You can't get that anywhere else.
Life would be better if you could start every day playing 9 holes before you had to go into work.
Legitimately, I would get all the emotions out that I might be feeling, whether that's joy or sadness or anger. I'd get that all out on the golf course, and so by the time I get to work, I'm like, I'm just peaceful.
World peace could be achieved if people could either play 9 holes before or after work every single day. Yeah,
yes. Which is there's the one issue is that I bet Trump did that every morning and nothing changed with that guy.
Yeah, taxpayer dollars. Yikes. Okay, insert ad for the group golf therapy line of candles coming soon. Go.
You're, okay.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, so you won the championship, but en route to winning the championship, you're teeing off on the first hole. They announced your name, Sean Yu from LA. What is your walk-up song?
Oh, fuck yeah. I love that. I always, I would always ask that with my friends with like, what's your baseball like walk-up song? And it was always, Can I Kick It by Tribe. But I think for golf, I think I need to match the energy of a first tee of a tournament, and I need to like kind of get my mind in the right place. Mm-hmm. And so like call me crazy, like I think I might play like a Sade song. Like I think like even like smooth.
Do you know who you're talking to right now?
Right, like even like Smooth Operator, like as popular as it is, like that would put me in the right headspace.
Jesus Christ. Sean, I think the first round of golf we played together, I was in a Sade t-shirt.
Yeah. No, yeah, honestly. Wow. Yeah. And I was like, that's why I was like, oh, I'm like, you know, I'm new here, but I was like, I feel really comfortable around these guys.
And also, what is playing at Westchester every time we go? It's smooth jazz.
Yes. You sprinkle the hip hop a little
speaker,
bit, but it's
speaker
like
by your side. No, I'm
right,
saying.
And it's the jazz that gets you back. It's like yes. The smooth music that gets you back. Because like you know, you could start around being like, oh, let's blast some hip hop. I'm with my guys. We're drinking beer, smoking weed. But then like it doesn't benefit your game. I'll be honest, it really doesn't. The vibes are probably immaculate, but it doesn't benefit your game. And when you listen to like something smoother and more kind of subtle, that's like really got a lot of soul in it, that's when your golf game like matches.
Yeah, your ear ear holes and your nose holes are like fully perked, fully torqued.
Fully torqued.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. Like with golf, like you need to have like the high, like, you know, golf is a marathon, not a sprint. So like, yeah, on the first tee, you might want some pump up music. You might want DMX. But but you know, on hole like 12, you can't keep that energy that high. You need to.
It's impossible.
You need the Cliff Bar. You need a hot dog. you need water. And you need some smooth jazz. So Sean, obviously new to golf, new to playing golf more regularly, I should say. So that's kind of become, I'm guessing, a newfound happy place for you. Was there something before you found golf that was your happy place outside of work and you know, daily life?
Yeah, I think, you know. Like I still play basketball. I play basketball a lot. That was my one like physical activity where like I can get that serotonin boost. But the issue with basketball is like there's a win and a loss at the end of each pickup run. At the end of each game, I'm either unhappy or I'm content, or not even content. I'm just like satisfied that I didn't lose. And there's just a level of like For people who know me and people who play basketball with me, they just know I flip a switch when I play basketball. I'm a real piece of shit. I'm a real asshole.
I love it.
We had more like Chris Paul, Pat Bev. Chris Paul, like okay. I got a team fully kicked out from a rec league because like
go Lance Stevenson and just blow.
Yeah, for
people.
Me, it's like I'm not gonna talk shit. I'm not gonna talk shit until the first person talks shit. Right,
that's, then that, it's
that's
over.
Just the way, that's just the way my brain works.
And it's so, like you open the floodgates. Now you're getting the
and you know, my teammates are always like, oh god, like why'd that guy say something? Now we're gonna like probably like get, Sean's gonna get gonna teed go, up, yeah. And he's gonna get someone else teed up. But I got like a full team kicked out of the league because like they wanted to kill me, and I was like. I'm not gonna win any fight, but I was like, what are you gonna do? Fight me in the parking lot, grown man? Like you're fucking soft.
And it's basketball.
They blew a gasket, you're right. And so, like to bring it back to the questions, like basketball wasn't actually that good for my mental health, and it wasn't really like that. it brought more just stress and anxiety in my life. But I don't know. That's a great question. Like I think I'm a pretty simple guy. I'm like an indoor guy. I love playing video games. I love watching movies, TV, like just getting high and on the couch. That's when I kind of feel a lot of peace. But that also like there's no benefit there. So I think golf has been the like thing
about?
That it's the thing that I've been missing, right? It's the thing that I've been missing because like I can be outside. I can still, you know, have a good time. There's a competitive aspect to it. Mm-hmm. But it's always like even if I'm exhausted, even if I have a bad round, I drive home playing golf and I'm like, oh, I want to go back. Like, when's the next time I'm going to go back?
Yeah.
When's the next?
Yeah.
There's been so many times where I finish an 18 and I'm like, I want to do another nine.
Yo.
Like, I just want to do another nine immediately.
And that's the best feeling in the world when you're right. Like, when you look around and you're like, should we?
Yes.
Yeah. It's like,
shall
you're,
we?
You're still playing and you're already thinking about the next time you're going to play again.
Yes.
Oh, that's God. The thing where you're like Brad, just like, you know, I've got a 950 and then like 3:30 tomorrow on Saturday, you know, it's
right.
Like, what are we getting back out here? And you haven't even played the first round. So
that's the bang, bang. That's the golf bang, bang. Me and my friends in high school, we'd go like, we'd get stoned and have two dinners in a row. Like, and it's called the bang, bang. And it's like, I'm talking about like going from the Taco Bell from the Taco Bell drive through to the KFC drive through. That's the bang, bang.
Yeah.
And like the golf equivalent is legendary.
Yeah, man.
Do you bet when you play?
No, I'm just not a gambler in general. I support gambling. I will help my friends with bets sometimes. I will put in like a couple dollar bet here or there, but I when I lose money that I've earned, I turn into a real freak. Like I get it just
get cagey.
I change. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned you went to the driving range before this podcast.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the success of getting a lower spot on the range. Can you explain to me like why, like low tier versus high tier? What's the rationale?
And S-tier, thank you. That's a great promotion right there, Brad. Buckets YouTube channel every Wednesday at noon. But it's specifically for Wilson Harding because the top deck, they only allow irons. And that's in quotes because everyone uses a driver up there.
Who's checking?
But there's something I think more, no pun intended, grounded about being on the ground floor because it's the same ball flight kind of as how you would be on a course. And there's, you know, knowing that they have those signs being like, irons only, top deck. Like there's almost like a nose stick-up-y-ness feeling of like when you're on the bottom floor. I'm like, I'm on the bottom floor. And then you see all those people that walk by down the aisle to see if there's an open spot. And you're like,
Turn around, sir.
and like, then, you know, there's people who camp out there at Wilson Harding. They will like camp out with their bags. Like I saw some dude like doing work, but just making sure he had that spot for like 4 hours during the day.
Wow.
And so there's like even Brad heard it in Brad's voice. He's like, you got a bottom deck spot?
Yes. Bro, I seen somebody like, rip a half a pack of cigarettes waiting for somebody to finish a bottom deck.
Like people will post up like knowing they're going to wait.
It's like a supreme drop. Like people just
People will wait knowing that they'll show up being like, I have a 2 hour wait, but I don't care. I'll get a bottom spot.
Yes.
And I'm like it's just rare. It's really rare.
That's
seriously.
So good.
Wow.
I couldn't believe pack. I got okay. it. I couldn't believe it.
Just boofing those cigs.
I mean, we took drivers off the deck when we were there up top. So,
yeah, we got video proof. We didn't. Yeah. We did not follow the rules. Yo,
DOD.
I was thinking about that today. Like, I was actually thinking about that range session we had at Griffith Park because we saw two of my former students there.
I saw that on Instagram. That's wild.
Yeah,
that was so cool.
Crazy.
Like, shit you not, I'm in my apartment vacuuming and I thought about that moment and I cut the vacuum off. I was like, that was incredibly special.
I can't be burning electricity on this. I need to think
it was incredibly special, period. But the fact that you two were there just, I mean, elevated that entire moment. Like that's a core memory for me.
Mm. Mm.
Wow. I had to put that out, man.
When you think about the logistics of that, like the time, the specific time and place, it's like you can't really quantify that, right? It's impossible to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were so sweet, and they were blown away that you remembered them.
They're like, oh, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah.
Like, you remember us?
Yeah. Like, you remember?
Man, teachers always remember.
You're like, yeah, you guys are little fuckers. Of course I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long did you teach for, Brad?
It was like, it wasn't very long, 3 years. I had a lot of help because I didn't know what I was doing. And I coached, but those two were incredibly gifted soccer players.
Wow.
And one of them stopped playing to go into like marathoning. Like that's it, that's like his concentration now. Like he's in school marathoning. So, man, it was just really cool to just see them and catch up with them real quick. And it was just, oh, man.
So like it's funny because like I like, you know, I grew up in the church, so I taught a lot of like youth group because, you know, that was like my way to, like whatever, serve and whatever. And I was just like, I'm the cool guy. I'll show up hungover and teach these like middle schoolers. And they loved it. But there's something like, you know, to that point of like I get a real like sense of fulfillment when I teach or just even talk to young people. But then like when you see them later down in the line and like I'm always like, I didn't teach them shit. They didn't learn anything from me.
Yo. Right.
But then when you get that reveal that they're like, dude, you meant so much to me, or like this, you told me about this and it inspired me to do this. Like that always like messes me up. Like,
yeah.
When, like, I'm just
feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't beat that. And it's like automatic. I'm just going to be in my car weeping like a little baby being like, I can't
immediately
believe it.
On site. Weep. Yeah. First event that the three of us ever did, and we're trying to do more of these, but was for like a junior golf program.
Oh,
and
that.
We spoke to a bunch of kids, and like for that exact reason though, which is like you go in thinking like, I know you guys aren't paying attention to a goddamn word that we're saying right now, but like even if there's literally an kid that is in there paying attention, that is going to carry whatever we're talking about with like defining your relationship with golf, going back to golf on your own terms, et cetera. Like that matters. That means something. And, and if we, you know, if we happen to cross paths with them down the line, and Brad, I even know you've crossed paths with some of those kids that we talked to at that night, at that
Since,
event. Like,
yeah,
that's, that shit is so meaningful.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, we talked about like your career and work, and you guys are asking me about like successes and failures. Like no level of serotonin will top something like that, right? No work success or no career goal or thing that you accomplish will beat something like that. Cause that is like, there's actual like tangible, like I actually, there's some change there. Not, you know, it's not in a self promotional way. It's truly like a heart to heart, soul to soul, like, wow, like, I got out as much of it as you did, and we both benefited from this experience, and you can't really take that away from anyone.
That, wow. That I think that really defines purpose in life and like why do we do what we do?
Wow. God, I know this is like a therapy pod, but I really feel like, you know, a sense of like fulfillment from just being on. It's really credit to you guys. I'm sure people come on and they think like, I'm just going to talk golf. And then you guys flip the script.
Bait and switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Got him. Another one.
I can count on like two fingers how much we've talked about. Like we've had a couple of guests where we talked more golf,
right?
Things, but yeah, I mean, usually it's not. So that's
I mean, it's in quotes a golf pod, right? Like that's I think that's what's
we're
so special
in,
about you
golf
guys.
Podcast category on Apple, but that's about it. It says golf in the name. That's
about all we got.
It
says golf in the name. Yeah. Sean, man, I feel like I could talk to you for hours. We gotta run this back.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to come back. I mean, I think it's really, again, like I when I said when I first played with Brad, I was like, everything feels really authentic and natural. Like, and maybe that's a credit because like he was friends with John, and John's someone I really respect and admire, and having that connection was great. But it's beyond that. Like, you know, like Drew and I connected through IG, and I was just like, seems like a good dude. I could just tell. And Connor already, I'm like, I could just chat with you for like hours, just about literally nothing. So, you know, a credit to you guys, because I felt really comfortable, and it's been like over an hour, and I was like, it felt like, you know, 5-10 minutes. So, you know, really enjoyed this.
We have that effect on people.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.